This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. I don't know about you, but I'm still a little confused about what caused the subprime mortgage meltdown, where hedge funds fit in, and what hedge funds are, and whether this mess is over or not. So we invited Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Gretchen Morgenson to help us out. She's a financial reporter and columnist for the New York Times. Back in the early 80s, she worked for a major stock brokerage. Gretchen Morgenson, welcome to Fresh Air. Let me start with a question that you can't answer.
I love those.
Are we done yet? Is the bubble burst? Is the volatility over? I mean, are you looking for more places where problems are going to show up?
Terry, I think we are now in sort of the eye of the storm. And let me explain what I mean by that. Some of the worst mortgage practices, i.e., mortgages given to people who did not, have a job or could not document their income or perhaps were fraudulently applying for a mortgage. Some of those worst practices took place in 2006 and even in the beginning of 2007. And so many of those mortgages had an initial period of a low interest rate and then would reset after 2 years. And so we have not even begun to see the problems emerging from those practices of 2006, which will start to come to the fore in 2008. So it's going to be kind of a slow motion train wreck, unfortunately.
Now, you've written a lot about Countrywide, one of the nation's largest mortgage companies, and you describe them as among the most aggressive lenders in the nation. Let's talk a little bit about some of their riskier products and the impact that that had. What were some of the risky mortgages that they sold?
Countrywide was right in the middle of the mortgage boom, i.e. the development of new products, the aggressive pushing or promoting of what were called affordability mortgages. And this whole practice really extended across the industry. It was not just Countrywide. Countrywide gets, I guess, some attention because of its size. Some of the mortgages that were the most aggressive were what are known as option ARMs or adjustable rate mortgages. And what that meant was that you had an option or you had a choice of whether or not you wanted to pay the interest and the principal down or just pay a very, very modest amount of interest. And what that ended up doing was creating a loan that you're really not paying off. And it would then add to the back of the loan the amount that you were not paying in principal.
There's recently been a record number of foreclosures. Let me quote a statistic that you've quoted. In August of this year, almost 244,000 foreclosures. That's up 36% from the previous month and more than double the number in August of 2006. So here's what I still don't understand. If you're like a mortgage company and you're giving mortgages to people who you suspect are going to default, where's the profit? Like, why would you do that? If they're going to default on you, why give them the loan?
Terry, that's an excellent question. And what it reflects is an understanding of the way that the home mortgage market used to work before the onset of what we call securitization. Wall Street wanted to get involved in home mortgages and because they're very lucrative and because of this whole idea of affordability and getting more and more people into homes. And so what Wall Street did was develop a way to package home mortgage loans, thousands of them, into securities that were then sold to investors. Now, you remember in the old days when you borrowed to buy a home, you did it with your local banker. The banker knew you. The banker knew the property. The banker knew whether you were going to be able to repay the loan and what the value of the property was worth. And he or she had a vested interest in making sure that the loan was paid off because he or she kept it on the bank's books. No longer. Now we have these securities that are constructed by Wall Street, put together at first by firms like Countrywide, who are mortgage lenders. They put them all together, thousands of mortgages into a security, then they're sold to investors. Countrywide is not necessarily on the hook if the loan goes bad. This, the investor who bought the securitization trust that contains the mortgage is on the hook if the loan goes bad. So you see, you've separated out the person who is making the loan, who is analyzing the ability of the borrower to repay, separating that entity from the ultimate owner of the loan. And so some of the natural, you know, responsibility or care or prudence that would be a part of that process, if you're going to hold on to the loan, has disappeared.
So if you're a riskier borrower, one of the ways that you're paying more is a higher commission?
That's correct. Another way that you're paying more is in a higher interest rate. But you see, many brokers were pushing these loans on people because they stood to make more money making a subprime loan than they did making a prime loan. And it was particularly egregious in cases where they could have made an FHA loan, which is a loan that is insured by the government and that was created for the very kind of first-time home buyer or lesser credit borrower that the subprime market went after with a vengeance. So for all of those brokers who should have been making FHA loans to subprime borrowers, who instead made these two-year teaser rate loans with the high reset rate, et cetera, all those brokers made so much more money peddling subprime loans than they would have made on FHA loans. And that really is one of the more egregious aspects of this mess.
Here's another place where I'm completely confused. If people are buying the mortgages from Countrywide because they're high-risk mortgages and therefore they'll have more of a payoff for the people who are buying those loans, you know, the investors who are buying those loans, how can that be if the people are buying those mortgages in the first place because the interest rates are so low? In other words, if the people buying the mortgages are buying the mortgages because the interest rates are so low, how can the investors get a higher yield out of it? I don't understand that.
Here's why. Because you have a two-year initial low payment period, and then after 2 years, it resets or ratchets up to a massive interest rate, okay? In some cases, 5 percentage points over the prevailing market rate, all right? So you could have a situation, and I've talked to many people who do, who have their rates go from 4% to 11% in 1 year. I mean, when the reset period ends.
Now, I know hedge funds were connected with the whole meltdown. I don't really understand what hedge funds are or how they're connected to these loans. So can you start by just explaining what a hedge fund is, and then I'll ask you how they're connected to the meltdown.
Okay. Hedge funds are of great interest to many people today because they have such enormous amounts of money, enormous pools of capital that they can deploy into various investment arenas. And so hedge funds kind of are the equivalent of the cowboys swaggering into the saloon. I mean, they really can drive prices up in a market if they are buying, and they really can push prices down if they're selling. So the reason everybody is so focused on hedge funds today is just because of the sheer size of the money that they control. So that's one reason why people care about hedge funds. The other reason why is that they are not regulated. And this makes people nervous. When you have the combination of enormous amounts of capital being put to work in various securities markets, and when you add on top of that the fact that they're not regulated, not closely scrutinized, people get nervous because you wonder, okay, are they really doing what they should be doing? Is there any concern here that they're maybe manipulating markets? It's really hard to know because there really isn't a cop on the beat.
So where do the hedge funds figure into the mortgage meltdown?
Well, the hedge funds have been big buyers of the sort of riskiest part of the mortgage market. They have been speculating in mortgages. And unlike the pension funds and insurance companies who have been buying the better quality mortgages, the hedge funds have been very, very aggressive and very involved in betting on the subprime area. So that's why they're connected to this mess. But the other reason hedge funds have gotten to be kind of really front and center is that in the market, in the securities market meltdown of August, where we had this extreme volatility in stocks and interest rates, the hedge funds really were kind of the culprit behind that. It was basically that they were unwinding or undoing some of the trades that they had on in very big size, and that was what created the volatility in the markets that were so unsettling to so many people in August.
So you think it wasn't like little traders, it was like the hedge funds selling things that affected the whole market?
Absolutely.
So as a result of the mortgage meltdown and the impact it had on the whole market and the whole economy, the Fed lowered interest rates. Why does that make such a big difference?
When the Fed lowers interest rates, it makes money more available, cheaper, and more sort of readily accessible to banks. And that, in turn, allows banks to be more free with the money that they are lending out. What we were seeing this summer, when it became clear that the home mortgage mess was going to extend beyond the subprime market and really start to kind of creep into other areas of the bond market, when that became apparent, it started to freeze up. Markets are, of course, made of buyers and sellers, and there has to be a confidence among buyers that they can get the price that they want and that sellers can get the price that they want. And when buyers and sellers aren't confident, they retreat, they stop trading, they just kind of go to the corner and watch, and they say, I'm going to wait this out, I don't like what's happening. And then you have a market that freezes or seizes up, as you know, some of the Fed officials say. And that's a terrible thing for the economy. That's a bad thing for business, and it's a bad thing for, you know, everyday human beings, because you need money to make the world go round. You need money if you're a home buyer. Let's say you get transferred by your company. You need to sell your home, and then you need to buy another one in a new town. You need it. It's the grease that that really spins the cogs. And so when that freezes up, one of the things that the Federal Reserve can do is lower interest rates, make the cost of capital for banks less expensive. And that's what they did.
Alan Greenspan, the former longtime head of the Fed, has a best-selling book. He's been all over the media, including our show. How do you think history is going to regard Alan Greenspan? Right now, people are divided over whether his lowering of interest rates and keeping them at very low rates for a long time was behind the mortgage meltdown, or whether he really helped the economy a lot by doing it.
Well, there's no doubt that he helped the economy by keeping money what is called easy for all those years. But I do believe that he will be viewed by history as a Federal Reserve chairman not of the highest rank. And the reason for that is because he did throw money at every problem that came along. It was almost as though he never met a bubble that he didn't like. He embraced the technology stock market bubble of the late 90s, did not seem to do anything about that, as we saw the stock market racing to new highs, internet stocks that had zero revenue, zero earnings, you know, trading at enormous prices. You know, it was ridiculous. People who had any experience whatsoever in the market saw that as a problem, wondered why he didn't raise the margin requirement on to buy stocks, for instance, you know, raise the amount that you as an investor would have to put down if you wanted to borrow to buy stocks. So there was that bubble. Then, of course, the low interest rates that he kept so low for so long did, in fact, create the mortgage bubble. And he was even on record saying that he thought adjustable rate mortgages were a terrific thing for people. I mean, So there's no doubt that he was very much a part of what we are now seeing as a series of bad decisions that have created a mess for people that's going to take an awful, awful long time to unwind.
When Alan Greenspan was on our show, I asked him a question that Robert Reich, the former Secretary of Labor, suggested that I ask. And the question was, why didn't the Fed do more to try and regulate the mortgage lenders after the Fed lowered interest rates so much? And Greenspan basically responded that that's really not the job of the Fed. He said that this is the job of state attorney generals to worry about, you know, like fraud and predatory lending. Is regulation not the job of the Fed?
First of all, I think that's just dead wrong. The Fed has obviously enormous power and enormous moral power, right, to stand up and say, let's get this going. Let's regulate these mortgage brokers. They had no regulation whatsoever. If Alan Greenspan thinks that he can say that that was not his job, then I would like to say, why didn't you get up and say, okay, maybe the Fed shouldn't oversee mortgage brokers, but someone should. Let's make that happen. It doesn't necessarily have to be him doing it or his entity doing it, but someone should be doing it. And that's the kind of moral power that I think the Fed has in its arsenal and should use and did not use. And so he really cannot escape liability here.
And just for the record, I'm going to read precisely what he said. He said, there's no question in my mind that there's a good deal of predatory lending going on. This type of action, which is essentially fraud, is a criminal offense and something which the Federal Reserve regulators or examiners are ill-prepared to supervise. And indeed, we were good at looking at balance sheets and judging concentration risks, but extremely inept on all criminal issues. And that's a job for state attorney generals.
Well, saying that it's a job for state attorney generals is also annoying because Eliot Spitzer, when he was the state attorney general of New York, was very aggressive about predatory lending and, in fact, struck a deal with Countrywide that was very interesting and was kind of a model. But the OCC, which is the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, basically did not want state attorneys general to muck around with banks and institutions that it oversaw. And so there was a battle royal, and at the federal level, it was deemed that the states really ought not to get involved. So for Alan Greenspan to say that the state attorneys general should have been in charge here is, I think, disingenuous.
A few months ago, you were on Bill Moyer's public television show, and he asked you if you thought we were in a new Gilded Age, and you said the new Gilded Age is about making money on money. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's funny. You know, when you think of the Gilded Age of the late 1800s, the Gilded Age that produced the Vanderbilt fortune, the J.P. Morgan fortune, the kind of robber barons, they were called. These were men who created corporations, companies, entities out of natural resources, out of things. They built railroads. They did mining. They built ships. They transported people. They transported goods. They produced steel, for instance, Carnegie. Now the Gilded Age is people managing money, the people that you see who are of among the wealthiest and the fastest growing wealth is in the management of money. Hedge fund managers who make hundreds of millions of dollars a year in fees. Private equity managers who oversee stables of companies that they manage and then hope to sell back to the public market at a later date, reaping enormous gains. These are the masters of the new Gilded Age. And it's funny because you compare the two and you say, wow, well, you know, Vanderbilt and Phipps and Frick and Carnegie, they created things that were palpable, tangible, that you could see, things that, you know, railroads that are still with us today. The new Gilded Age are people who are really, I think, siphoning off money from people who are just trying to have a comfortable retirement.
Gretchen Morgenson, thank you so much for talking with us.
Anytime, Terry.
Gretchen Morgenson is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter and columnist for The New York Times.